Hello, everybody, and welcome to Burning River Radio. I'm Joe Koblitz at BR Baseball on Twitter, and I have traded Justin Lotta to Cleveland Baseball and Brewers for a player to be named later in Jensen Lewis.
Ooh. Boy, you got fleeced.
Oh, no, here's Justin right here.
I'm not going away that easily.
That was a surprise. I thought we were going to have Jensen Lewis on this podcast like the fancy people do.
Oh, yeah, well, if you want your listeners to actually hear about baseball and not sound stupid and proclaim they're smarter than everybody else because they played, then...
I don't know how you can have a conversation with with Jensen for 20 minutes and not ask him anything statistical, but somehow that happened on that other show. Anyway, big news of the day being the trading deadline, is that the Indians picked up Joe Smith. And you could think, like, didn't the Indians already trade for Joe Smith? Yes, but this is a different time. Same guy, but they did it again. Franklin Gutierrez was not involved this time.
Should have been.
I guess. Anyway, so they sent... I guess I want to talk about the guys they sent a little bit, and I'll talk about one, and you can talk about the other, because those are the ones we've seen.
Yeah.
It was Samad Taylor and Thomas Pinnone went to Toronto for Smith. And I've seen a lot of Samad Taylor because he started in the AZL and then played in instructional ball and then played in extended spring this year before he went to Mahoning Valley. I saw a ton of him, and I'll say I liked him a lot. He had a really nice swing. He was a great defensive second baseman, probably the best defender, probably the best defensive infielder they had last year. Just because Jones kind of fell off in the second half for some reason of the season, he didn't play as well as he did in the first half defensively. So I'll say that Taylor was the best defender they had in the infield. Yeah, they had a lot of good defensive outfielders. So he was really good there. I think that's really his primary thing. And I think you're talking about, like, it's so hard with these guys in the AZL in Mahoning Valley. They've got 25 to 30 guys on the roster, and maybe one of them makes the major leagues. And if you're going to say from last year's team, one guy makes the major leagues, it's probably Nolan Jones. So, like, I mean, maybe they'll have more than one from there make the majors. Maybe Will Benson will make it. Maybe Oscar Gonzalez will make it. Like, they're guys who are good. But chances are most of those guys aren't going to make the majors. So to send a guy as young as Taylor, and he just turned 19 a couple weeks ago, to send a guy like that out is not a loss. So the guy who is a loss, I'll let you talk about, and that's Pinnone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's... First of all, I mean, people always dig into this stuff. Like, you see all the reports on Twitter, like, oh, they didn't trade a top 30 guy. They didn't trade a top 30 guy. Everybody refers to, I think, MLB Pipeline, because that's what's on Major League Baseball's website. So it's the most accessible prospect source. You know, if you don't subscribe to Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus, and I have at different times had subscriptions to both. And I buy Baseball Prospectus's book and Baseball America's book each spring. But none of them really had Pinnone up that high, unfortunately. And I think going into the season, that's fair. Because last year he was down. I know he was down in the low 80s at some point with his fastball and was struggling towards the end of the year. So that's fair. But when Pipeline redid their midseason prospects, they left out the top 30. I can guarantee you that I didn't get a chance to see. I don't think Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus goes that deep at midseason. But I can guarantee if they did, he would be someone in the top 15.
I'm looking at my personal. I keep a running tally throughout the year of my minor league rankings, it makes it a lot easier to rank them all at the end of the season. Because every November we do our full site rankings and we'll rank the top 60, essentially. So I keep a running tally throughout the entire season, and it changes from time to time. But I would say Pannon for me is a top 20 player, and Samad Taylor I have in the top 25. So neither of them may have been in anyone else's rankings, but as somebody who's seen a lot of these guys a lot, I had them both in the top 30. I will say our rankings are a little different because once you make a major league debut, I no longer consider you a prospect. So there's no Eric Gonzalez, there's no Yandy Diaz, these guys, Adam Plutko, these guys are all gone off our list.
Right.
So which you I'm guessing MLB Pipeline is a lot of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you took all those guys out of theirs, Pannon would be in. But I think even with the guys, I'm just going to quickly pull up MLB Pipeline Indians prospects now. But even with the guys that are in their rankings right now, the fact they don't have Pannon in there now is baffling to me. Even though we don't rank Ryan Merritt or we don't rank Sean Morimondo because they've made their debuts, to me, Pannon's better than Ryan Merritt.
Well, I think that's apparent. Yeah. Right. I would say he's better than, I would say almost every pitcher who's in AA or advanced A right now is better than every pitcher in AAA. It's kind of, at least as far as ceilings are concerned, and that's probably an overgeneralization, but the staff in Lynchburg is incredible.
I wanted to point that out too. Did you see Shank throw a 9-inning no-hitter on Saturday?
Yes, I did.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so those guys are all great, and there's a few really good guys in AA, and I got to temper that because I think Peoples is in AA, and I really don't like him, but other than him.
Yeah, just looking at this list, okay, Brady Aiken's 25. I'm going to say right now I've seen Pannon and Brady Aiken a lot in the last year each. Aiken this year and Pannon I saw more last season before he got promoted. I would have Pannon over Brady Aiken. I don't think at this stage of his career Brady Aiken's ever going to pitch in a major league game. He walked six guys yesterday. Thomas Pannon to me is going to be a major leaguer at some point.
Even if he did, he's so far away. And like I said, these higher minor league guys, the double and triple A players, you can be fairly sure whether or not they're at least going to make it to the majors. And like I said about Taylor, you don't know. I mean, maybe Taylor gets hurt and never makes it past advanced A. Maybe he's got a hole in his swing and, you know, at the higher levels they take advantage of him and he can't continue on playing. Whereas a guy like Tyler Krieger, who's already up there, he has a much better chance of making it to the majors in any fashion.
Right, your percentage.
And that's kind of why, that's why, like, a Pipeline will rank Eric Gonzalez way higher than he should be. Because, to me, Eric Gonzalez is and always has been a utility infielder. And I know Andre Knott got mad at me one day for saying that.
Oh, just let him play his career out, yeah.
Yeah, it was like the first day he came up, and he hit that first home run, and everyone went crazy, like Eric Gonzalez is some sort of superstar. And I'm like, no, he was – when I was watching this guy, I think I did see – if I didn't see him in AZL, he was here like the year before I was. And, I've followed his career throughout the whole time frame. And every level, it was like, this guy's utility infielder, this guy's utility infielder. You know, that's just the way it looked. If Alexis Pantoja – ever plays an inning in the majors and he hits a home run, I'm telling you right now, he's a utility infielder. Like, that's you can't tell 100% of the time, but you can tell some of the time. You know, these guys are not superstar material, so I don't even like wasting
those guys. Those kind of guys are easier to identify than superstars. Like Will Benson and Nolan Jones are drafted high and they have high ceilings, but when you see a guy like, you know, you said Samad Taylor or Eric Gonzalez, you know, those are guys you can look at and say, okay, they don't have superstar ceilings, but you can see some of their tools make them somebody who can provide value to a big league bench. So, like, those guys are probably easier to identify their future. Like, you can easily see, like, okay, this guy's probably going to make the majors. Like Roberto Perez in Lake County. I think a lot of us could tell he was part of the Captains 2010 championship team. It was pretty easy to see defensively at some point he was going to get a shot in the majors because he was just so good defensively. Those guys you could see from a long way away, but it's guys like Will Benson or Nolan Jones that are harder to identify their future because there's such a high flame out rate for those guys. But yeah, I'm with you on Gonzalez. I think Taylor probably qualifies the same thing. And Pinone, so, any pitcher has a higher flame out rate because they're pitchers. But to me, what Pinone did at Double A this year pretty much solidified his ceiling. I think his ceiling is a guy who's a 4 or 5 starter who can, you know, give you what a 4 or 5 starter does. And at worst, he's Brian Merritt, where you know you can bring him up if you have a injury or a doubleheader. He can be that 6th starter and at least give you a shot to win.
So I want to say, ask you, obviously you don't really know because we don't know what's going to happen with these guys in the future. But at the moment, do you feel it was a fair deal?
In 2017, yeah, it's a fair deal, I think, because Thomas Pinone's not going to pitch for the Indians in 2017. It's very unlikely he's going to pitch for the Indians in 2018. Hell, it may be impossible for him to pitch in 2019 here because Tristan McKenzie should leapfrog him at some point. Mm-hmm. There's Aaron Civale, there's Shane Bieber.
Esparza has played well. There's right. A lot of high-ceiling guys.
Right. So the next, 2017, 2018, 2019, very unlikely that Pinone was going to make any sort of impact, at least in 2018. He could have made his debut in 18 or 19, but very unlikely to make an impact. So I don't love they gave up that kind of depth for a 33-year-old reliever who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. That kind of bites. And obviously Taylor, I think we can both agree. I haven't seen Taylor as much as you at all, actually. I think we can both agree that Taylor wasn't going to contribute to this team for another 4 years.
Oh, yeah, and it's kind of like the trade last year where they sent Yonleiter Salinas to Tampa for Brandon Guyer. It was like I had just watched Salinas pitch the night before, and he was pretty good, and he was the most consistent pitcher on that team. That included Brady Aiken. It was a little disappointing to see him go, but I was like, well, when is he – like, you never know if he's ever going to pitch a game. So, I mean, yes, it's very much worth it for Guyer. And I think this is probably a good trade. It's tough. Sean Armstrong is going to end up getting sent down to AAA again for this. And I like Sean Armstrong. He took a lot of heat tonight because he gave up a run.
Yeah. I mean, I love when guys relievers get ripped on for allowing a run and what is essentially was a blowout because the Indians' offense didn't show up.
But I'm going to say that I still think the Indians need more relievers from the minors right now. And with Brian Shaw's a free agent at the end of this year, Joe Smith, who they just acquired, is going to be in the bullpen for the rest of the year. He's a free agent at the end of this year. And Cody Allen and Andrew Miller are both free agents after 2018, I believe. So you need somebody to come up now and be a lights-out reliever. And I think that it possibly could be Armstrong. Probably not, but, you know, there's a chance. And McAllister's going to be gone by then, too. So you can't just say, oh, McAllister's going to take it. No, he's been around just as long as everyone else has. So you really have to look for the youth, and you got to test these guys. You know, you can't just keep them in AAA for life.
Right. I mean, you have to make sure you have guys to take over. I mean, that's why I thought it was kind of short-sighted to DFA Percy Garner. And what I've heard or what I saw on Twitter was that Percy Garner's had a pretty rough year throwing strikes. I'm not sure what happened to him, but it sounds like he's kind of not really finding the strike zone or not putting together back-to-back solid outings. I think he was hurt. But I thought it was kind of short-sighted to DFA him because I don't know. I have no idea who this Diego Moreno guy is, the Indians just claimed. But the fact that they DFA'd Percy Garner before they DFA'd that guy that they just picked up 2 days ago.
Yeah, I saw his numbers. His numbers were absolutely awful. But
yeah, I didn't understand that at all. And you got guys. There's enough guys down there you can turn into relievers. Like, if Dylan Baker ever finds a way to stay healthy, there's Dylan Baker, and there's obviously, you know, Merriweather could be a reliever. Dalbert Sirian, writer Ryan Lake County, will future relief.
You're talking about Lake County, though. They're going to need relievers in 2018. They've got two now major people, Sean and Smith, assuming Smith comes up and pitches as well as he did for Toronto. Two major people will be gone out of the bullpen next year. So they need at least two replacements. McAllister and I think McAllister's gone after 2018 too. So it'd be McAllister, Allen, and
Miller.
Miller.
Oh, yeah.
All gone after 2018.
2019 bullpen is going to be – I mean, you have a lot of guys locked up in 2019. The bullpen is going to be completely different unless they extend any of those guys. I find it very hard to believe they're going to give a contract to Miller or Allen, especially Allen, because I think that other teams will – other the baseball will value him fairly. Whereas obviously Indians fans don't see the value of Cody Allen or Brian Shaw. I think Brian Shaw is going to wind up getting a 3-year, $25 million deal in the offseason.
But I don't want Shaw back, and I'm not going to say he's a terrible pitcher. But if you look at Joe Smith's numbers, which I was looking at him today, after he left, he had one great season in L.A., and then he was terrible for a few years. And if you look, he pitched 70 games each the last 3 years he pitched for Cleveland, and then he pitched 70 games for L.A. And I think that kind of wear and tear really builds up. And the Indians have been killing Brian Shaw like that. Yeah. He's the most – I think he's about like the third most used reliever ever in Indians history. In about a week or two, Allen is going to become the most used pitcher in Indians history. So Allen's been used a little bit more, but he's also been here longer. So, like, he's really burning both of them. And to me, that's fine. Like, pitch Shaw 80 times this year and then let him go into free agency and let someone pay a ton of money for a pitcher who, probably has a short shelf life after this.
Right.
So that's fine. I don't mind them letting him go. I just think you do need to work on. And, I mean, I definitely have guys I like in the minors to be a possible future relievers, starters and relievers that are currently relievers now and starters that could be turned into relievers. But I don't see them in AAA.
That's the other side of trading Pannone, too, because I think long-term, Pannone probably is a starter, even if it's the back end. I don't think you see a whole lot of uptick with him as far as making him a reliever. I don't think he's a guy you put in the bullpen and, he becomes this great left-handed reliever. Maybe, but it doesn't seem that way. But if you keep him as depth as a starter, it gives you the ability to maybe turn a Julian Merriweather or, another right-hander, another reliever, another starter into a reliever to fill that void. And now that a piece of that depth is gone, as far as relief options or starting options, it forces you to kind of reroute.
I think they still have plenty of starting pitching depth that if they want to turn somebody into a reliever, they can do it. That doesn't worry me at all.
Speaking of that, I don't know if you noticed, Tristan McKenzie did not make his start today for
– Yeah, it was going around on Twitter. I would assume – we assumed he'd be in AA by now anyway, but
– I think after the trading deadline made a lot of sense. I think they were going to wait to see what they did and see how he was doing. And now that he's obviously performed very well at Lynchburg and the trading deadline's passed, it probably makes sense to send him to Akron.
I want to say I want to do a little dude I called it today, because I said prior to any trades being made by the Indians that everyone, the whole month, people have been talking about McKenzie Mejia. Like, it's the only two people that most fans know about in the entire minor league system. And so what I said this morning was, if the Indians make a trade, it probably won't be from those positions. It'll probably be a depth pitcher or a middle infielder, because they have a ton of middle infielders and they have middle infield locked up in the major league level through 2020. So it doesn't make sense to have that many. And that was where they came out. They've got all their pitchers locked in through 2020, and they got their middle infielders at the major league level locked in through 2020. And they've got guys behind them like Eric Stametz, and they've got Tyler Krieger, who are nearing major league ready. It doesn't make sense for them to have 40 guys that can play the position. I thought Yu-Ching Chang would have been a great guy to trade.
I think that would have been the case had they traded for, Zach Britton or one of their names mentioned today. I think that would have been the case. But
yeah, well, I'll say,
Joe Smith costed that, that would have been a problem.
Yeah, but I mean, we were talking about possibly getting Yu Darvish until the Dodgers picked him up. Or even Sonny Gray before the A's moved him to New York. Those were both subjects of interest for the Indians. And they said after the deadline that they pretty much had talked to every single team about every major player who could possibly be moved. So I think, but that's, to me, that's where you deal from. You don't deal your catcher. You have one catcher. Literally, they've drafted all these catchers the last 2 years. They have one catcher who looks like a major league catcher. You don't trade the one catcher who looks like a major league catcher. That'd be insane.
I would argue with you about Eric Haas, but I mean, I get your point, yeah.
Okay, but a major league starting catcher who can hit. They have one.
Eric Haas can hit. Have you not seen the home runs?
Okay. I've seen him play him.
I mean, obviously, obviously Mejia is a top 20 prospect in baseball.
That's the guy. And just like, they could probably have dealt from center field. I feel like they have some, they have a fairly deep center field while the corner outfields are not very deep. But I wouldn't have traded Greg Allen. Like, I would have put him off limits just because he's so close and because to me he's like that final piece that lets you replace Michael Brantley in the outfield when you need
to. Right, because Brantley has done at the end of 2018 and so is Chisenhall, so a natural fit would be to have Zimmer in right and Allen in center, and then you're talking about an elite outfield defense. I have no idea who plays left field, maybe Yandy Diaz. I also wouldn't have been stunned. Yeah, I forgot about Cheeto, yeah.
Well, Andrew Kalika and a few other guys, Counter Maribel, in the upper minor leagues at this point.
If they would have traded for any of the pitchers, I would have been not surprised. Like in a Yu Darvish deal, Yandy Diaz probably would have made a lot of sense because I feel like I don't feel like they've soured on him. I don't want to say that, but I feel like not giving him a shot with all these I still think right now the fact that they're giving Urshela and they're giving Gonzalez chances and they didn't recall Diaz says a little something.
Yeah, and we always get into this. There's definitely a difference. Oh, I have to look up the actual quote now. But there's definitely a difference in what
they say and what they do. Yeah,
like what the standards are of baseball, like what fans understand, and what the team actually does itself. That makes no sense. And I got to read this quote by Terry Francona about Kyle Crockett and Tyler Olson. Because it makes no fucking sense.
I didn't understand that one at all.
Okay. It says, they're a little different skill sets. Crockett is not the left-on-left guy. I think Olson can be a left-on-left at some point. But I think he also has enough movement on his fastball that he can throw a full inning.
I don't understand what the hell that means. I didn't understand it from the second Zach tweeted it.
Okay, so the Crockett half, he's not a left-on-left guy. That means he's either too good against everybody. He's a matchup lefty. That he can only be used as a matchup lefty. And he's only thrown, 64 innings in his entire major league career. And 30 of those came in his first season when he had a 180 ERA. And after that season, I would believe, he's too good to you should use him against everyone. But he hasn't pitched as well in the last couple of years. And so let me get his splits here. So he's not a left-on-left guy. Against lefties, he has a .242 batting average against .301 base percentage, and most importantly, a .309 slugging percent. Those numbers are all significantly higher against right-handed batters. He's also struck out 42 to 10 walks against lefties compared to 19 strikeouts to 13 walks against righties. And he does have slightly more plate appearances against lefties because he has been used as a loogie some of the time. But to me, like looking at those numbers, how can you say he is anything but a left-on-left guy? So that's what he said. He is not a left-on-left guy.
I don't get it. And Tyler Olson, he's saying that Crockett's not a left-on-left guy. But he's saying Tyler Olson's not either, but he could be. If you're good enough reliever to get lefties and righties out, you're definitely going to be probably better against lefties if you're left-handed. No, like Like Andrew Miller, if Andrew Miller stupidly was used as a loogie, if he didn't face right-handers like but maybe 5% of the time, his numbers obviously wouldn't have the usage, but his numbers would be really inflated because he's facing left-handers. So you would think like, okay, if he's not just a left-on-left guy, he can get both out. His splits are still going to be better against left-handers. So it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I want to say that Olsen hasn't pitched very much in the majors, so you can't really take his stats at the same value as you could take Crockett's or someone who has. But down the line, his batting line is significantly worse. He's given up a .444 slugging percentage to lefties and a .658 against righties. Like, both against lefties and against righties, Olsen has been worse than Crockett. And that's just in the majors, I guess. You know, maybe they saw – I obviously didn't see Olsen in the minors. He wasn't with Cleveland until this season. But there's nothing in the world that would go to show that Crockett is in any way worse than Olsen.
No, I don't think there is. I mean, Olsen doesn't have his last 10. I'm just looking at his last 10 games. Like, he's pitched a full inning more often than Crockett has at AAA. The weird thing is, like, Olsen splits. He's got a 3.86 ERA against lefties. And he's pitched the same amount of innings against lefties as he has righties total. But his batting average against is .187 against lefties compared to .247 against righties, and a much better whip. So I don't know. Maybe they see something in Olsen. I have no clue
that means. You got to throw away the ERA and splits. That doesn't mean anything. Because I mean, the runs could have came on like the guys who got on could have been right-handed or left-handed. Like you can't tell necessarily.
MILB splits. Primitive.
Yeah. So I just use the batting line generally in strikeouts per walk and K per nine and that type of thing. And I have really liked Crockett since he first came up. I loved what I think in general the Indians coddle their players way too much. I think a player's ability level probably peaks earlier than 28. Like in Major League Baseball, you peak at 28. But I think because of the athleticism that's so important now, especially defensively, that they probably peak at like 25 or 26. And I've seen plenty of guys in recent years who have just fallen apart by 30, and they're retired by like 31, 32. So I think you really want to get those early years in. And I love it when they promote a guy like they did with Allen and Crockett, immediately getting into the majors out of the draft. And they both really excelled that first year, and I don't get at all why they are not keeping him up. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And they rushed him, like they fast tracked him through the minors. Yeah, I mean he made his.
No, that's what I'm saying. He made a couple. He only played a couple games in the minors.
I don't
before
know
he came up in his first year.
Why they fast tracked him? It's like he almost got on the Jesus Aguilar train, where Francona is just done with him. I don't know. I really don't know. I know last year he had a back issue. They had a back problem. And I think that's why they left him off the postseason roster. Or. Mm-hmm. Whatever had happened, or he didn't get a September call-up even, I think. I thought that was the reason anyway, but maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I'm so confused with this Kyle Crockett thing. It's beyond comprehension at this point to me, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so the last thing we want to talk about today, and this probably took 6 hours to actually talk about it, so we don't...
Yeah.
I guess it's more of a complaining about it. It may always be the case in baseball, and maybe they're just making too much out of it. And I have to put a lot of research into this, and I just haven't taken the time. But it really seems more like ever before that the Indians will either put 12 runs on the board or zero. And they just put some absurd numbers up in their 9-game winning streak. I saw it the other day, but it was like 81-5 or something ridiculous of what their run differential was. They just killed everybody every game, except the one game they won 2-1. But every other game, they just destroyed all comers. And then they lose two games in a row. Boston game one. it's you know, it's so weird, and I think some of it is they've always shown a liking to pitchers that they know well. Guys like Justin Verlander, who they've seen 100 times. Of course, they've seen Pfister 17 times, and it doesn't really help against them. But the guys that they know well and that they hit well, like Verlander, like Chris Sale, for some reason, like they don't make sense. It's the best pitchers in baseball, but those are the guys that they know well. Those guys, they seem to just hit all over the place. And then you'll get a guy like Pfister or some lefty that just came up from AAA and is never going to be a major leaguer again, and they just brought him up for this one start because someone got hurt. And those guys will just dominate the Indians. It doesn't really make sense given how mature their lineup is, how many switch hitters they have. It shouldn't matter if a lefty or righty comes up when you've got your three of your best hitters are all switch hitters.
It's confounding. I don't know. Maybe it's that whole thing of hitting is contagious, I guess. I don't know.
But that's just a horseshit line. I mean, like,
the lineup even got changed today. He actually put Jose hitting fourth and Edwin fifth, and he actually detailed the reasoning behind it, and everyone
that made me sick. Saw
the reasoning. Well, because if it makes sense.
But it was the right reasoning. But the fact that he's like, "Oh, we really thought about this hard, and we worked." It's like everybody else has been telling you this since April.
It's not even people like us. It's. I guarantee that their front office has been saying this. I guarantee they go through lineup scenarios every day, or they run projections all the time.
And I read Smart Baseball recently, and I did the Burning Griffin book club for July on it. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, I wish somebody would just buy this book for Matt Underwood, you know, and let him read it. But Terry Francona could read it and learn a thing or two. It says, they don't really go into detail on the fact that there is no such thing as lineup protection. If you want that, I believe it's in the baseball prospectus. What's it called? Like, Everything You Know About Baseball is Wrong or something like that, from 15 years ago. It was the first sabermetric book I ever read. And it's fantastic. And they've done the math on this. There's no such thing as lineup protection. The only thing, you can change the amount of walks somebody gets, but that's it. You cannot make them a better hitter. They don't get more fastballs down the middle. It's just an issue with walks and nothing else. You can change, like, what slot you have. Maybe you have a better chance of knocking guys in. If the guys get on in front of you, you have a much better chance of getting an RBI. But it's not really a protection issue.
That's what I continue to say. Like, with this, I mean, we always find a way to get into line of protection somehow. I have no idea how this always comes up, but
well, that's what you just brought up. Jose Ramirez getting moved, and that's the whole reason. And they even said he wants now he wants Encarnacion to protect Ramirez. It's like, well, you just said you needed Ramirez to protect Encarnacion. Like, are there some batters that need protecting and some that don't in this made up bullshit that you're just creating out of nothing? This,
and now his reasoning now is that Santana's hitting the ball well again, and he's a switch hitter. Well, Santana didn't just start becoming a switch hitter. Like,
well, and Ramirez is also a switch hitter, so one of them could – if you have to have a switch hitter hitting 3 and 5, it could be either one. You know, you could have been hitting Santana 3.
And that's fine. Like, I think that's a great strategy, having a switch hitter protect your best hitters, or you want your switch hitter to be your best hitter. But it just – it makes no sense to me because – He used the same reasoning he's been using all year, but it's all of a sudden, it's because Santana's hitting well. It makes a difference. But I looked up a few weeks ago that if you just look at it, it doesn't matter AL or NL, every pitcher, not every pitcher, but I mean for the league average, pitchers' ERAs are higher with runners on than they are with the bases empty. Obviously, that's, you know, kind of simple because if you allow a home run with runners on, it goes up. If you allow a solo home run, it's not as much. But the point is, pitchers' ERA tends to go up as runners get on. So that's protection. You're statistically giving your hitter a chance to do better with a runner on in front of them. There's not even like, you don't even need to do a study about that because a runner on is going to be better than a solo home run. So if he runs into a two-run homer, it's automatically better than a home run, a solo homer. And
the ultimate argument, the base argument that should win over everything else is that the higher you up you are in the lineup, the more at-bats you get, and you want Ramirez to get more at-bats than pretty much anyone else in the lineup. So that's why you want to hit him up. But a secondary thing on a more strategic level is I noticed this early on because Ramirez did hit in front of Encarnacion before now. They've kind of gone back and forth. It's not been a permanent thing, although he was there for a while. Early in the season when he was hitting behind Encarnacion, there were many times when Encarnacion would get on and then Ramirez would get on and then somebody else would get a hit. Or even if they don't, and they're just trying to move up, Ramirez could never move because Encarnacion is going station to station, so he can't get past him. It's like a wall in front of him. Where, you know, every single time the both of them got on at the same time. Or let's say Encarnacion's at first, and Ramirez hits a ball that he'd normally hit a triple on, and he can only get a double because Encarnacion's at third. Like, he can't score. He went from first to third on the double, but he couldn't come home on it. And I saw that happen multiple times. I'm like, well, if you just, they're both very good hitters. If you just flip them, Encarnacion is never going to, or Ramirez is never going to get in Encarnacion's way. He's always going to be way ahead of him. So you put Ramirez on first and Encarnacion hits a double, that's a run. Whereas if you flip it and they do the exact same thing, it's not a run. Like, to me, that's enough of a strategic advantage that I never would have ever hit Ramirez after Encarnacion.
Too much logic. I don't know. I mean, from day one, I think even last year, you could have made a case for Ramirez at higher in the lineup without Brantley instead of platooning Santana and Davis at the top of the order. But, you know, everyone liked having Rajah Davis lead off against left-handed pitching, but he was terrible against left-handed pitching last year.
And again, it's almost a waste to have Zimmer hitting leadoff. You could move everybody up one. And when they bring back Jason Kipnis this week,
oh God,
I'm worried they're going to put him in the top four. And again, Jason Kipnis, I love him. He's one of my favorite players ever. But he is not a top four hitter on this team. He's not a top five hitter. He should probably be hitting six or seven.
Like he and was when he first came back from the first injury.
In fact, you probably have a better chance of scoring more runs more consistently if you have a hitter like Kipnis in the bottom half of the lineup. That really improves the bottom half of your lineup, but he's not good enough to bat in the top three. So if you just force him in there, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, just because a guy used to do it, but the thing is, those lineups weren't as good. And you had, I can't even think like back to how bad those 2015 and 14 lineups were with David Murphy and Nick Swisher and Michael Bourne.
Well, yeah, and I even remember before then, I remember Sinsu Chu, they used to goof around moving him from 3 to 1 when he was not only the best hitter on the team, he was essentially the only hitter on the team.
Yeah, really.
At a point. And it was like, well, if we hit him leadoff, then he's getting we're getting the most out of him, but he's never on with anybody on base. And if we hit him three, He's still not up with anyone on base.
Doesn't
he's
make just a difference,
two right. outs now. So it doesn't like so I remember that argument at the time, and it was like it really doesn't matter. You're not gonna win anyway, so who cares whether Chu is hitting first or third? But you know, now it does matter a little bit. And
it doesn't matter where you hit because you hit first, you're gonna get more at bats. You hit second, you're statistically gonna get more at bats because of how the lineup turns over, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter where you hit in the order because, except for getting more at bats, because you might lead off in the first, you might never lead off again.
It depends. If your worst three hitters are hitting 7, 8, 9, then chances are your leadoff hitter is going to come up with nobody on base.
Right.
Whether he's leading off the inning or not.
That's the argument for having Zimmer lower in the lineup, and even Kipnis. Kipnis is hitting 7th or 8th, even, you have a better chance of having Santana and Lindor and Brantley hitting with guys on. That's why it always made sense to have Zimmer 9, because
Yeah, one, and I'll say
the speed on the bases. Number two, you're putting them in front of your best, what should be your best three or four hitters.
Yeah, and I'll say I never agreed with that, and that was one of the things that Smart Baseball changed my mind on, because he really went into the theory of when you're a National League team, bat your pitcher eighth, and why you do that, and that was exactly why you do it, because you don't want a pitcher, if he does get on base, to be standing on first base when your leadoff hitter, who probably can run, gets on. You know, and that's exactly what I said about Encarnacion. It's the same thing. So I would prefer Zimmer hitting ninth for exactly that reason. And you get to move everybody up one. I would hit Encarnacion third before I'd lead off Zimmer. You know, go Lindor, Ramirez, Encarnacion.
I would like to have second problem. Encarnacion third. That's what I really love.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, Lindor first, Ramirez second, and Encarnacion third. And then you can go Brantley, and now Brantley is protecting Encarnacion, and you're still going right-left. So you can't,
and you have a contact hitter behind Encarnacion. And that's the other part exactly. of it, too, I do agree with, is that there are certain skill sets it just makes sense to do when you're following a hitter. Like, I mean, as much as I hate the idea of a hit, I'm not agreeing with Jose protecting Edwin, but because it made no sense because he clogs the bases up. But the idea that you would want a contact hitter, a guy who makes a lot of contact in that situation, makes sense. Because if someone in front of him draws a walk, even though Edwin's a truck, it makes no sense. But if Jose draws a walk and Edwin's behind him, if Edwin's protecting, you know, I'm using air quotes here, protecting Jose, and Jose gets on base, yeah, you can't probably do a hit and run because Edwin's going to swing through it, and you can't do it the other way because Edwin's a truck and when Jose is up.
Yeah, and I'll say it didn't work out tonight because Encarnacion grounded into a couple double plays and he didn't do much. But in the long run, you've got a guy who's an extra base hit machine like Ramirez. Edwin coming up after him and either walking or hitting a fly ball to right field or whatever, you know, those are all – positive things, and he's going to move up on those plays. So I think in the long run it works much better in this particular way. And to me, the lineup seems so, it seems so easy to set. You just go, you know, Lindor, Ramirez, Encarnacion, Brantley, Santana. Like, it just, it falls into place so mm-hmm. simply.
Without stacking the lefties, yeah.
They make such a big issue about it, like it's rocket science, and it isn't. Put your best guys on top, make sure you don't it just seems so simple to me.
And watch that, tomorrow; they'll score five runs in five innings off Chris Sale. Just watch who's having.
Well, they probably will. Career. Yeah, they probably will hit Sale, and even though he's a lefty, he throws harder though. They have, it's the soft tossing lefties they seem to have.
Even yeah,
issues with more. All right, I think that's
I fully expected them to come in today and hit the crap out of Pfister. I really did, but
I did. I saw a stat after the game. I think they said in 15 of the 17 times Pfister's pitched against the Indians, he's allowed two or fewer runs.
Sounds about right.
So, I mean, they can't hit him. So, it is what it is. You move on and go to the next day. And hopefully they don't play the Red Sox in the playoffs.
Yeah, because they'll just start Doug Pfister. They won't start every game. They'll start Doug Pfister.
Yeah, every game.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for today. We'll be back with you next week for more hopefully something changes by then. Kipnis will be back at least.
Oh, you didn't mention trades you wanted to see happen or did not want to see.
Oh, that's not okay. Yeah, that's okay.
Did you have anything you were hoping happened?
Me personally, I would have been fine if they. The thing is, like, if they got like Yu Darvish, or Sonny Gray, or whatever, then you can take one of your starters and put him in the bullpen instead of getting Joe Smith. And you can bet, and you would go back to a five-man rotation, I think, for sure. So that means you're getting rid of, and Tomlin's on the DL, so he got rid of himself after pitching a no-hitter. Of course he did.
Yeah, I really liked, well, I should have asked what your feelings on that were yesterday during the game.
I don't, whatever. But, yeah, so I'm happy that they didn't deal from weaknesses in the minor leagues. I'm happy they didn't trade a catcher or a third baseman or a, you know, corner outfielder in the weak spots of the field. I'm glad that they traded from a place where they have a surplus of players. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I agree with you right there. Even though I think Pannone was a little much to give up for what they're getting back, they still dealt from position of strength. Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
it's better than getting Asdrubal Cabrera, though, if you had to bring back somebody who used to play on the team.
Oh, yeah, probably true.
All right, he's Justin Latta, a whole lot of Latta. He's at JL_baseball.
Whole lot of frustrated.
You can follow me on Twitter. I said it wrong. It's at Burning River BB. And make sure to check out burningriverbaseball.com for all the fun stuff beyond the podcast. I don't ever research anything for the podcast. I just make up shit as we go. I actually look up stuff for the actual articles I write. And I don't swear on there. So
all the time.
It's a little bit different. All right. We'll see you next week, guys. Goodbye.